Crib Notes, things parents Google at 3 a.m.
You're listening to Crib Notes. I'm Rick.
And I'm Sarah.
First week of your baby. Ah, what a time to be alive.
I can hardly remember it.
It is tricky. Some bits, the nights. I remember the nights. Oh, the nights. And the visitors. But we have got exactly the right person today, haven't we?
We have. Today we've got Amanda Thompson, who is an antenatal teacher at Bundle Baby Group. And she's a baby massage instructor and mum of five. So we'll be talking all about that first week, managing a crying baby and that tricky witching hour, as well as things like your first bath and managing visitors.
Thank you so much for listening, by the way. And tell your friends. Click subscribe on Crib Notes. And you can also tag us on Instagram. Loads of good tips there for free. Just search Crib Notes Podcast. Don't forget, what's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.
Two sets of twins and one in the middle. Yeah, I mean, most people start with wow, don't they, with you, I imagine, Amanda?
Complete utterly, complete disbelief. What, you had a second set of twins? Well, yes, it actually happened to me. Yep.
And we've been really looking forward to talking to you, haven't we, Sarah?
We have. We need to get all of your insight and how this is possible.
I'll do what I can.
So today we're going to be talking about the first week at home. To put it bluntly, this is for the first time you're bringing back an extra person into your house.
Scary stuff, actually, for all the parents.
Yeah, I think that's the reality, isn't it? When you're back home for the first time, you think, gosh, I don't know anything about babies.
Mm-hmm. A lot of head scratching, dad looking at mum for, she's the expert, mum looking at dad thinking, I don't know what to do.
And in that time, parents are also still thinking, gosh, what on earth happened with birth?
For the first week for me, I can't exactly say it was pleasant. I was always very conscious about who was going to come round, how the days and nights were going to be. I was really worried about what sleep I was going to get. And I was also worried about Chantal, how she'd be feeling kind of immediately after. And you know what? All my worries were correct.
I do think it really is like a really harsh reality going home. And often your baby may have been sleeping so beautifully in hospital. And as soon as they go home, you know, all hell breaks loose and they're just screaming. And I think it's a big shock for most parents because they have this very romantic idea about what it's going to be like. And it's a big change.
Yeah, it is an absolutely enormous change. For me, it was straight after a really kind of, how can I put it? Quite brutal 3 days in hospital, where when you do get back, you're thinking, well, I am not just looking after the baby, you're also looking after your partner because they need the help as well, don't they?
Completely and utterly. I mean, if they've had quite a stressful birth, and actually birth, even if you've had a what I call a pretty textbook birth, you still got recovery to do. So, you know, you leave hospital and you're a first-time parent and you get home, you've got to recover emotionally from the birth and physically, and you've got a little baby to look after, and it's very overwhelming.
So for us, we had an emergency C-section, and it was a case of Chantal had been pushing for 12 hours, they said,
exhausting.
At 4 in the morning after a long time in full labour, that the baby's half an hour away. And then she was still pushing at 10 minutes past midday after she said 8 hours previous that it was going to be almost over. And then they said they tried to get the baby out. It basically wouldn't come through the birth canal. They could touch the baby's head. It was that far away. But they couldn't get the baby out. So they then went to the emergency C-section where we all went in. You know, at this point, you're absolutely knackered because you've got nothing left of your energy because you've been up all night long. You've been in labour for so long, and then you eventually get into an operation room and you're signing forms, medical forms with the hospital, and you really, you don't know what you're signing. I remember them saying to me, don't worry, I don't need to sign it. You can just do what you want. And they said, no, you've got to sign it. Yeah. I said, well, you know, we'll sign it, but we don't really know where we're at. And by this point, the contractions were so intense and so regular that, you know, we were actually really relieved when we did actually go in. And she had the epidural, and then the baby came out, you know, covered in blood over this, looked over the top of the sheet about half an hour later. But it was, you know, a lot of people are really relieved, you know, to see the baby and come out. But for me, it was actually just pure relief for Chantal that I was just like, is this moment is it ever going to end? That was my whole thought, Sarah, the whole time. Is it going to end?
I think it's extremely stressful, and I don't think people talk about it enough. People put a lot of pressure on themselves about this natural birth. I mean, what is natural anyway, to be honest? This is, you know, a bit silly. But it does make you think, actually, you know, this is stressful. People don't talk about it enough and they do sugarcoat it. But what is important? A healthy baby and a healthy mum. So let's just think about what is important in these situations.
Actually, can I just add to that? It's also worth saying at this point that it's terrible when the mother's going through such an ordeal, but actually for the birth partner, be it your husband or your parent or a great friend, watching this happen can be really overwhelming because it's not happening to you and you're like an onlooker and things can happen very fast and quickly and you can feel quite out of control at that time.
When you're actually in labour, you're not necessarily as aware of your surroundings, whereas
exactly.
the partner can see this whole thing going yeah. on and it's probably more traumatising for them. I do think, though, that we do need to remember your body did not fail you if you had to have an emergency C-section.
Completely.
This is actually really common. 1 in 4 women have a C-section for their first delivery. This is not a surprise. And we've put so much pressure on ourselves about what our birth preference was. But really, what is important is that your baby is healthy and that everyone is safe. So just take every day as it comes and try not to dwell on things because that will impact on the next few days with your baby. That actually may make it more tricky to bond with your baby as well.
Can I just say, I think if you do find that you're dwelling on things, I think it is really important to talk about it, be it with your partner or a friend, or if that's not helping, you can go back to your hospital trust to ask them for a sort of debrief. Because some mums or dads do in fact need that to help move on.
I think that's really helpful because sometimes you're not aware of all the decisions that were being made and why they were being made. And so if you can actually get someone to talk through with you the process, it can really
Completely.
Help to relay some of that anxiety.
Definitely. And you can debrief, you know, a good 6 months later if you're not ready to do it because it's too near the birth. Some women or some couples need a bit of time to reflect.
So that we know that at around day 3 after birth, and you may be more tearful and more emotional, and that's actually completely normal. We know that this can happen any time in the first week. But if, for example, you are feeling that you've got a lack of enjoyment in life, lack of energy, you're tired all the time, and you're withdrawing from people, maybe you should consider getting some more help. So speaking to your midwife or potentially your GP, because it may be that you have the first signs of something called postnatal depression. And this is actually really rather common, isn't it?
It is. So what you mentioned about day 3, that actually, there's usually a big correlation with baby blues.
Yeah.
With mum's milk coming in. Mum has a huge hormonal surge and that can be accompanied with something called the baby blues, which, as you just explained, is tears for no apparent reason, feeling a bit overwhelmed, a lot of love and just a bit sort of teary for no, yes, as I say, medical reason. Obviously, if we're looking at postnatal depression, which can affect about 12% of mums,
yep.
This is something that should be taken a bit more seriously and something that you could talk to your GP about. It's also worth saying that postnatal depression can come on very quickly, so you can get a sudden onset, or indeed it can take up to about a year to manifest itself. So if you
feel... and it can creep up in you quite slowly as
Absolutely.
Well. So people may not actually realise until actually after they've come out the other side. If you are feeling a bit low, I think it's really important that you do seek help early because this will really help you to move forward with this. Like you said, you can speak to your GP or your midwife. And please do remember that this is not your fault. This is very, very treatable. And it does not mean that you're going mad or that your baby will be taken away. It just means that you need a little bit of help at this time, which is completely understandable considering everything that you have been through.
Yeah, and simple lifestyle changes or getting extra support in can be all it takes. So getting a night nanny in to help you of nights if you can, or a family member to come and help you at nights. Make sure you're getting some fresh air and getting outside. Maybe taking an extra vitamin supplement because you may not be eating properly. Looking at your diet and just getting an extra pair of hands in to help you.
Mm.
As they say, it takes a village to bring up a child. You know.
Absolutely, yeah. I think let's talk about sort of self-care in general if we can, because I think all parents all need more self-care, I think.
Completely. And, you know, mums don't always know what's best for them. So if you have got a helpful partner who can keep an eye on you to make sure that you are eating properly, that you are drinking 3 litres of water a day, particularly if you're breastfeeding, that you are trying to rest when the baby's sleeping. I know.
I don't like that saying. Though. Some people always say sleep when the baby sleeps.
I mean, I agree.
How is that even possible?
I do.
That's great for you, but it's very, very hard. I mean, like, sleep when the baby sleeps, do laundry when the baby does laundry.
It's so true.
I mean, let's be real.
It's so true.
Our baby, until the 12th week, did not sleep whatsoever in the day at all. And that's unusual. I know.
That's so
unusual. And it's exhausting. So when the baby went to bed, We did the absolute basics. And to this day, we still go to bed at 8:15 every night.
Well, good for you.
Well,
8:15 every night.
I think that's the problem. Lots of mums.
And I'm a night owl.
You never get that nice length of sleep. Between 16 and 18 hours out of 24, but it's unfortunately not in a big chunk of time. It's usually in 2 hour sleep cycles here and there, interspersed with feeding in between.
I think that's why we found it so hard, because obviously your life when you have a baby is completely turned upside down. And it's going to be massively different anyway. But if you find that you have zero time to yourself, and you know, hopefully when you're listening to this, your baby will have long naps in the day and you'll still have some time just for the two of you, if it's just one of you and friends and partners, you know, relatives, whoever you're with. But for us, it was completely relentless. We didn't have any time on our own, and we massively struggled. When it comes to people saying, isn't it just lovely to have your baby home and have it the warmth of it, we struggled, and maybe it's me more than anyone, struggled to actually relate to that, because we found it a relentless 24-hour job that actually brought little joy in return, to be honest here. Mentally, definitely, I've enormously suffered in the first 12 weeks. Chantal did better than I did, but it was because it was basically almost not a breakdown of our relationship, but a complete end to our relationship, as it was. And it's because we never had that time anymore. And things like, if you listen to this and say, oh, Rick, you know, it's absolutely miserable. Well, it was for the first 2 weeks, but it has got better. And, you know, it does reach that point that it does improve. Mm-hmm. And if you are going through the absolute misery of it all, and if you are having that bad experience, and that's not what everyone's going to get. We just had a child that decided never to sleep at all. So that was just our experience. But it does get better.
Yeah. That's really good to hear.
I think one of the big things that we need to consider is that parents need to manage their expectations. I think lots of people put a lot of pressure on themselves and a lot of pressure on their child to be this perfect baby that sleeps when they should be sleeping, feeds when they should be feeding, but actually feeding might not go well and sleeping may not happen when you expect it to do, and then the crying happens, and that combination can be quite toxic. And particularly when the baby, all it does is really feed, sleep, nappy change, vomit, feed, sleep, nappy change, vomit, and it's not giving you that much back until later down the line.
It's our first smile, actually. I always say to parents in our classes that, you know, around the 6 to 8 week mark, where perhaps you really are losing the will, you'll go to pick up your baby from the cot in the Moses basket, and they'll give you a little smile, and you'll go, okay, all is forgiven.
All is worth it.
All is worth it. That little smile, it really helps.
Week 6, peak misery for me.
Oh. But that's when the crying can really peak at week 6, and then it tends to settle down again. I would just point out, though, as well, that postnatal depression is something that can happen in the fathers as well as mothers. It's not talked about as much, but if, for example, your partner or yourself, you're struggling with mood and sleep, it's something to consider also seeking medical advice, because it's not something that's talked about enough.
I mean, completely. I to honest you, not talked about enough. I don't think I've ever heard it spoken about with dads.
We do try and signpost it, actually, because often father's depression can be linked to mother's depression, and also all the changes, as you've just very well said, which have happened at home in terms of lack of sleep, changed relationship at work, not having the freedom you used to have to go out for a beer perhaps after work, financial pressures, increased workload at home, then trying to do a job. All these things can hugely impact on you.
It's so tricky.
People don't actually talk so much about the financial pressures. And I think Sarah and I are going to talk about this in other pods, but you know, you are also going from two full salaries to not two full salaries, if there are two of you, if they're lucky that there are two of you. If not, then there's still going to be some impact on you if you're a single parent. So, you know, it is something to bear in mind and plan ahead for.
I'm really glad we've had this conversation, actually, because I do think that the sort of transition to parenthood can be quite sugar-coated for a lot of parents.
Awfully sugar-coated.
And for some parents, it is a breeze, but for others, it can be a struggle. And actually, this is supposed to be the best thing which has ever happened to you. And actually, it can be really challenging and really boring and really isolating and really lonely.
And really hard to admit that as well.
And really hard to admit that. So to talk about it as we are now, I think is really positive.
And I do think that sometimes, for example, we're in the world of social media and things, parents are often, they're sharing this idealistic realistic picture online, but actually that may not be the reality that they have at home. People talk about find your mummy tribe, but sometimes your antenatal group may have a WhatsApp, which may be really positive, but may not be really positive for you. If there's people who are making you feel worse in that group by always making you feel like you're being a bad parent and do things different than you, just be aware of that. You don't have to engage with that.
Or Instagram. New parents on Instagram.
Well, that's the problem now, isn't it? You're just inundated by these media images or images of perfect lives, which are not, obviously, but they perceive in your eyes as that.
Absolutely. I would like to say that we've talked about the fact that you can feel overwhelmed and completely on your own, but you're not. So in your first week, you will be seen by your midwife, probably on the first day that you are at home. And don't be surprised if she turns up unannounced. And so you don't need to get fully dressed and your house all perfectly tidy. She's seen it all. So she'll be there to answer some of your questions. She'll check you out, look at things like your tummy and your stitches, your blood pressure. And she's also there to answer any baby questions as well. She'll be looking after you until about the 10th day. And she will be doing something called the newborn blood spot. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, we had it done. And Sarah, you're so right. You're so right. Don't be worried about how you react and what questions you ask her when she comes in, because the first time she came round, our midwife was absolutely lovely, and she's like, oh, what a nice house you've got, love your kitchen services, and we're like, yeah, we're doing fine. The second time we come round, you know, Chantal doesn't mind me saying this, she just completely broke down in tears and said, literally, the sleep is absolutely destroying me, and I'm struggling. And you know, and she was really helpful,
and
it wasn't abnormal for her. It wasn't then a note in the red book that you get this red book that says, there's a problem here. It's just like, this is normal, so here's some help, let's talk about it. And it was just for her to talk to someone else about it and say, no, that's normal.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what she's there for. She's seen it all before. She's there to troubleshoot, and it's much better if you are honest, because they might be able to sort things out early. For example, if you're struggling with feeding, she can help you with that latch. She can give you some strategies towards sleep. On day 5, she will come round and do something called the newborn blood spot. And this is basically a heel prick, which is done to look for serious but rare diseases. It looks for things like cystic fibrosis, hyperthyroidism, sickle cell disease, and various metabolic conditions, which are conditions that if we know the results, we can start treatment early with things like a diet and various medicines. But if we don't pick them up, it can be quite serious for a baby. So it is worthwhile making sure you have that test.
Just to say, it can be a little bit, again, overwhelming seeing your baby having a whole heel prick blood test done.
Just wait until they get the jabs.
Yes, exactly.
One of the things to think about is that actually your baby has been through far worse when they went through birth, and the risks far outweigh the benefits. I do think that often if you're feeding at the same time as having that heel prick done, it really is quite a nice distraction for the baby.
Yeah, good tip.
One of the things that parents often say is, why are they asking so many nosy questions when they come round? But it really is just for your benefit. They're not going judging you.
We had a work experience person there as well. I mean, it kind of just makes it even more embarrassing, but at the same time, you just don't care. So it's fine. Should we talk about crying?
Yes.
Babies cry. All babies cry.
Babies cry day and night.
It's a normal physiological thing. And I'd be more worried if your baby wasn't crying at all. Actually.
What's normal though?
Yes, good question. So probably within 24 hours, babies cry about, on average, 2 hours.
It can be completely normal for a baby to cry up to 12 hours a day. And I'm sorry to give you that news, but it is true. We do say that if you're concerned, please do speak to someone and see if there's anything that needs to be looked at. But actually, it's completely normal for a baby to be crying for 2 to 3 hours a day at the beginning. And just being aware of that will hopefully provide you with a bit of reassurance.
And of course, Amanda had twins twice. So if that's 2 hours, that's doubled.
Absolutely.
Twice.
Let's not go back to those days.
Yeah.
But is there any way of communicating, don't forget, for babies?
Yeah.
So it's just a question. There's just a way of letting you know that something may be up.
Mm. And it's what makes you worry the most as well, because it's their only way of communicating that they are crying so much. And sometimes you don't know what they are crying for. But, you know, gradually you do come to realise, and you know, this is me asking Sarah so many questions all the time, that, you know, it's generally because they're either tired, they're hungry, or they want their nappy changed.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, it's generally one of those three.
Yeah. I think the thing is, I mean, they are brand new to the world. They have no idea what day or night means. They don't know why it's now cold, it's now dry, and now everything sounds different. So I think, you know, if you think about it like that, of course the baby's going to find this whole new world very surprising. And as you say, as you get more comfortable in your new role as a parent, you will gradually start to understand, oh, this cry might mean that they're more hungry, mm-hmm. and this cry might mean that they're a bit more tired. But don't beat yourself if you don't know that straight away, because, you know, or even sometimes you may never find out really what was causing that exactly. crying, and that's fine too.
It could be a bad morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, and you don't
they
really
get
ever get the bottom
too,
of it.
And no one allows babies to get grumpy, but why not? We can get grumpy.
And I think it's important to attend to your baby's needs. So never feel, you know, that old adage, oh, you know, you can overspoil your baby and let them cry a bit and let them cry it out. Actually, no, attend to your baby's needs. You know, just by picking them up and giving them a cuddle, often that can settle them. And you will, as you say, as you become more confident, you'll begin to learn what their different cries mean. And that does happen over time.
I think generally a good rule for newborn babies is first think, could this be hunger? And then, you know, it's worthwhile thinking, oh, you know, has the baby, for example, got a wet nappy? Are they too warm or too cold? Do they just want to have a bit of a cuddle or to mm-hmm. be rocked? They're kind of really good starting points to think about what's causing the baby to be crying. But if your baby has a very high-pitched cry, or, you know, an abnormal cry for them, like quite a weak cry, they may be signs that you might need to just get some medical attention. If you're worried, it's no harm getting medical attention. But most of the time when I see babies where parents have been worried about crying, the long ride in a car to the hospital completely settles it down.
Can I also add to the crying that babies, newborn babies, can't stay awake for very long. So often they cry because they're completely overtired or overstimulated. So do bear in mind that once your baby's been awake for at least an hour, your baby might be ready for some sleep.
Yeah, I think that's true. And particularly when a baby's first born, it may just feel like all you're doing is feed. And
wish
then
mine was like that.
Feed, then sleep. But yeah, I know, poor Elizabeth. But, you know, that is the thing, isn't it? Every baby is different. Your baby may be different as well, and that's completely fine. But there are just some tips of, you know, what you can do if you do have a baby who's crying and you're struggling to know what to do. First thing, like we said, was try and feed them. Then another thing to think about is, do they need changing? Do they need holding? Do they need rocking? Do we need to check whether they're overdressed or underdressed? And then thinking about motion. Motion can be such a great thing for babies. So if you think about it, when they were inside, they were jiggling around as you were wandering around. And now that they're out, it's a massive change for them. So think about, could you take them in a walk in a pram, ride in a car, walk them around in a sling? These things are all so helpful for babies. I don't really like the term the fourth trimester. I don't know if you've heard of this term.
Yes,
it's a bit like pseudoscience-y. I mean, fake science. But there's a lot to be said for the fact that actually, if you can recreate that experience that the baby's had in the womb, it can be really calming for babies. One big myth is that babies need quiet to sleep. When they were inside, they could hear lots of whooshing. They could hear your heartbeat. So actually, you know,
mine loves the pub.
Yeah.
Loves the pub.
Start her off
exactly.
young.
Yeah. Start them off with some
we are in there at opening time.
Well, white noise is very good.
White noise is brilliant.
Yeah, it's very good for that.
The vacuum cleaner,
anything, absolutely. And actually, if you have got one of those days where your baby is crying seemingly relentlessly, getting outside into fresh air can help. You know, can help baby, as you say, the motion of the buggy or the pram or in a sling. But also for you, it just calms things down. And, you know, if you do get pushed to the point whereby you're just feeling you can't cope anymore, sometimes just by putting your baby down somewhere safe in his or her Moses basket, walking away for a few minutes, taking a few deep breaths, you may find that your baby just falls asleep because they just want to be left alone. But it also gives you time to regroup.
Yeah.
Because you do feed off each other. And the more stressed you become, the more stressed your baby can become, and then you get stuck in that awful cycle.
I think that's so important. People feel really guilty saying, oh, you know, putting the baby down. But actually, sometimes that can be the thing that really settles things. And so many times babies can be overtired and parents are trying desperately to rock them to sleep. But actually, that's keeping them awake more. And you just need
to just be left alone.
They just need a bit of a settle.
Amanda, can I ask you about witching hour? Because I know you're quite a specialist with this and you've been through many.
I have.
If someone's really getting stuck and fed up and worried about that 5 till 7 as what we find, what are your tips for them?
Well, I would say what certainly helped me back in the day, and I had twins to start off with, my sister, who was not didn't have a child at that point, used to come and help me at bath time. So if you can get any extra support in at that time, someone just to come along, maybe take the baby off your hands for a little walk around the block to give you a bit of time, it can be hugely beneficial. Mm. If you're at home alone and dad's gone back to work, dads, can you please try and make sure that you're back in time to help with the bedtime, bath time, sort of wind down?
Because it is exhausting, that time of day, although you're kind of thinking, exhausting. Yes, you know, it's nearly bedtime, but that is just such a tiring time of day for parents as well, which probably makes the whole thing even worse.
It does. And I hate to say this, but it goes on till sort of school age.
But it does get easier.
It does get easier.
Even after 3 months, it gets easier.
It does get easier. Yeah. But it is a cranky time of day. It is a cranky time of day generally. Some babies also choose to cluster feed a lot at that time. So, and some babies might need a quick cat nap, not to in a bedtime, but just a little cat nap. But it is one of those times that seriously.
It's really hard.
That cluster feeding is actually completely normal. Your milk supply, if you are breastfeeding, is actually quite low in the evening compared to the morning. So the baby's really trying to, you know, bank that up so that they can have a good rest overnight. So do let them do that. And also, as they're doing that, they're releasing lots of those lovely sleepy hormones, which are going to help them sleep as well. So those two things. And I think that brings me on to visitors as well. So in that first week, every man and his dog wants to come and visit you. But actually, you sometimes need that extra support later down the line when your partner may have gone back to work and you may be needing that company a bit more then. And so I think it's okay to say no and just wait and so that you get people to come and visit at different times.
I think that's a very good point. In fact, we try and encourage our parents to spend the first 2 weeks, I say together, bonding, getting to know each other, trying to get breastfeeding established, trying to get visitors to a minimum, or certainly maybe have a visitor a day. And that's when we say the partner could become the guardian of the house in a way, you know, can filter off the visitors. And if they are going to come, hey, could you please bring a shepherd's pie, or could you bring something to put in the freezer for us rather
something
than helpful. Coming? Yeah. And sort of
needing to
down.
Be waited on hand and foot.
Exactly.
I think you're right. Some people talk about doing 1 week in the bed and 1 week on the sofa. Mm. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I have to be honest, though, I am quite a busy person normally, and I was itching to get out and about. And I think just trust in your own body. And if you want to do that, I think that's fine too. I do wonder if next time round I might just go at a slightly slower pace. It's a marathon. Just be guided by yourself. And I don't know what you think about the evenings as well. We had a friend who was so eagerly excited they wanted to come and visit us in the evening after work. But I think you have to be bold and say, no, this time of day is witching hour. It's not a good time for you or baby. And as we know, babies are often crying more at this time of day. So I think just save that to the weekends.
Definitely.
You've got your own time.
I mean, I'd also say bring gifts for the parents,
yeah.
not the baby. Don't bring them another fluffy toy. They don't know what it is. You know, like you say, Sarah, bring you know, a cottage pie, or Amanda, as you said, bring
stop
a cottage pie.
The freezer.
Stop
yeah.
pie.
Yeah.
Bring
have
some food.
A lunch and
bring someone and
come
at lunchtime. Yeah, it's much better.
Yeah. Completely.
I think that's such a good point. And in terms of that witching hour time, you talked about bath time. That can actually be quite a good distractor over witching hour, can't it? Because the bath can be quite soothing.
It can. Actually, having said that, some newborns
hate
their bath and cry the place down. There's no right or wrong time to introduce a bath. But if you are thinking about, and I'm going to use the word routine very loosely here, if you are thinking about introducing a routine, your bedtime bath time is a good place to start. Try and keep it short, calm, dim lighting, not too much stimulation, so the whole vibe is down and babies will pick up on that quite quickly. Then you can introduce a lovely warm bath, maybe a bit of massage afterwards if your baby will tolerate it then.
Daisy absolutely
feed,
love that.
Bed.
Yeah.
In theory.
I think that's the thing. And quite a few parents seem to ask, when's the right time to introduce a bath? And there isn't really a right time. You certainly don't need to do it in the first week. And actually, it will allow all that lovely Vernix, which is the baby moisturiser, to absorb if you do leave it a week.
We went week two.
Did you?
Yeah.
I think we were the end of week one, week two as well. I can't quite remember, to be honest.
And it was just the sink.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're so small, they don't need a big, huge product,
exactly.
Do they?
Bucket, sink. Yeah,
yeah.
All
and
fine.
Sometimes it's worthwhile having someone with you the first time because it can be a bit daunting, you know, placing your tiny little baby into this water and worrying about them slipping.
Actually, I think this is really useful and nobody told me this. I would buy a baby bath.
That's, they're great.
And they are a game changer for your back, for the ease of use in dropping your baby in, saves a lot of water, speeds up your time, and makes it a lot easier to run as well if you are on your own and you might need to actually put them in first and then push it under so you've got the right temperature and it's safe for them to...
Yeah.
We got that on week three and it changed our lives.
I don't know about you, but I think that the baby thermometers are a bit of a, as in bath thermometers, are a bit of a non-necessity. I think you can just be sensible and use your elbow, whatever.
Elbow. Absolutely.
But yeah, by all means, you can use a thermometer if you want.
Yeah, and the other good, you mentioned the bath, baby bath, which is great. There are other things you can buy. They look like little deck chairs or pieces of foam or little plastic devices, as it were, which stick to the bottom of the bath that you put your baby in. And those can be really helpful because you, I don't mean your hands free, but it gives you just a little bit more space to maneuver around without having to hold your baby 100%.
So moving on to where your baby should be sleeping. Now, at the start, they could really be sleeping anywhere, couldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, we have to talk about guidelines here. And the guidelines really are that your baby should sleep with you in your room for the first 6 months. What parents do with that information comes down to personal choice, but the guidelines are very, very set on that.
If they're sleeping on you in the daytime, if they fall asleep, it could be anywhere.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And that's the thing. People think you need to be in this quiet, dark place, but actually, your baby, it's better if they get a lot of daylight from the beginning because that is going to really be the thing that helps with their circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
And they're so it's the rhythm of your body, the learning of the night and the daytime. So at the beginning, they don't really have any of their own melatonin and they really need to learn.
Yeah. I always shove her under the light in the morning to let her know. To let her know. There you go,
Elizabeth. I'm sure she loves that.
Yeah. You're northern. Yeah. There's some light.
But they really can be actually sleeping in your living room, in your kitchen with you, with all of the noise and everything. And you want them to be flexible. You want to be able to go out and meet your friends for a coffee. And so it's great. I mean, as they get older, it's going to be harder for them to sleep in those noisy, noisy places. But I actually found that that was such a godsend at the, you know, in the first 6 months or so, being able to do for her sleeping everywhere.
Yeah, I think if you can get your baby to sleeping everywhere, it's really useful. As you say, you mentioned 6 months, some babies from sort of 4 months, their curiosity of the big wide world gets the better of them. So their heads are sort of spinning around and around. And so therefore, feeding in public becomes a bit more challenging because you think they're breastfeeding and their heads have gone sort of...
Interesting.
They're looking at what's going on, you know, behind them. So that does happen quite quickly.
How can you kind of prevent that happening, or can you
it's
not?
It's very tricky. I think the thing is, if they are, sometimes you can just prepare and like feed before you go. If your baby's hungry, then just time when you go out roughly when you think it might work. But actually, it's fine. It doesn't matter if there's a bit of an exposure every now and then, because you know we should be promoting people breastfeeding in public.
And by then, you've done it all, quite frankly.
Yeah. It takes a bit of getting used to that, doesn't it? Like the first few weeks, I know it's been for us. It's kind of, well, we're in the park, we're doing park run. Yeah, I know she's not. She's doing park run. But you know, she needed to breastfeed at the end of park run. And of course, there are 250 people at parkrun. Mm. Yeah. So it's find a bench and breastfeed on a bench. Those, so it just it takes some getting used to it.
You can get certain breastfeeding scarves, actually.
The aprons.
Yeah, I ended up just using a muslin. But some of my friends had really great scarves, which just mean that if they are getting a bit distracted by the outside world, that can really, really help.
So I know something that other people come to you about is newborn vomits and spitting up.
Exactly. I mean, it's so normal for a baby to have a bit of a posset every now and then.
Absolutely.
And I think people worry, don't they, that if their baby is dribbling down the side after a feed...
Is that positing? So
positing, all that basically means is a bit of milk coming up after each feed. I think if your baby was having significant vomits, so projectile vomits after every feed, or, you know, if there was a different colour to their vomit, like it was a green colour, or if there was any specific worries or your baby was not gaining weight, obviously please do seek medical attention if you're worried. But little possets are totally normal. Baby vomits or possets are more of a laundry problem than a baby problem.
So true.
You know, when it comes to changing nappies, it's something we talk about quite a bit, but this is something that I've noticed really, really, really changes from, you know, this is first week with your baby to now where I am, you know, a few weeks down the line. What's normal? How many nappy changes are we expecting?
Actually, we do hand our new parents to be a what's on a nappy visual aid to help them for the first few days, because obviously, as you probably realise, the baby's poo changes quite quickly in those first few days from the black meconium to a more green-like colour to settle then on a more mustard colour. And we would say they expect to change between 10 and 12 nappies.
Yeah.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. It is a lot.
It is a lot.
And I found sometimes that we would use a nappy change in the middle of a feed to really wake up the baby so that they would be really ready for the next feed as well. So it can seem like a lot of nappy changes. It does feel like you're constantly changing the nappy when the baby's first born, but it will significantly
it does drop down.
It drops off.
Yeah, it does drop off. And as you say, you can use them tactically to wake the baby up, or you'll find that as you're feeding them, you know, what's going in is coming straight out the other end.
Yeah.
So that
happens. I get one of those, the nappy bins. We didn't have one at the start. We soon had two.
They're actually pretty useful, aren't they?
They're
like,
so
why would
useful.
Need any more paraphernalia? Yeah.
Specialist nappy bins. They don't smell. They wrap them round. You pop them in and you only have to change them all at once, and you just tip them all at one point into your wheelie bin.
Yeah,
they're great. Another game changer for us.
True. And the other thing, just because parents always say, but how do you know if your baby's wet themselves or whatever? Nowadays, you can buy nappies. I don't know if you've come across them, with a little indicator line. So when they wee, the little indicator line changes colours because they're so good at absorbing. Mm. And again, we're often asked, do you change your baby's nappy at night? And we would often say, if the nappy is saturated and very heavy, then you may want to. But unless they've done a poo, why would you do that?
Generally, a wet nappy shouldn't cause too much nappy rash. It's a dirty nappy, and it's the mix which can cause that irritation. But a dirty nappy generally does need changing pretty quickly.
Yeah. When you bring your baby home in that first week, it is important to know that they do lose about 10% of their birth weight, don't they?
Yeah.
We went and got a weighed, actually,
quite often. I think it's every Wednesday we're going to get, or every couple
of
weeks.
So after your midwife has finished coming to visit you at home and she will weigh the baby, you will then be asked to go to a weigh-in clinic just to check that your baby is gaining weight nicely. And this will be then plotted in your red book just to make sure that your baby is growing nicely.
And also, you know, again, we're asked that question, how do you know if your baby's gaining weight? Well, how do you know? Look at the nappy size. Is your baby thriving? Does your baby have settled times during the day? Is your baby growing, you know, growing into the next clothes?
Mm.
All these things are good indicators. What's in the nappy? Is your baby producing wet nappies, doing some poos? All this is quite good indicators
really
for you as a parent to know that your baby's thriving.
One important thing to talk about with the poos, just going back to them, is that after that first transition from the meconium to that lovely yellow chicken korma poo, is that your baby may be completely normal and going 10 times a day, but that's, say, another baby could be not going until day 10, and that's completely normal. A breastfed baby can go over a week without doing a poo, and that can be completely normal.
Yeah. We often hear that my baby's constipated, and actually constipated.
I know. It's completely. Yeah. As long as your baby passed meconium in the first 24 hours and is gaining weight and there's wet nappies, we're quite happy as paediatricians if your baby doesn't go for over a week, which can be quite surprising for parents.
Up, actually,
we have explosions at 10:30 and 4:30 every day.
And, up the back.
Up to 14 weeks.
I mean, we've had bleak moments. Moments, to be honest, here where it's been everywhere, and it's I mean, sometimes you just got to put them in the bath, so it's tough times. What about when it comes to feeding? You know, when it's early on, we were feeding a lot, probably up to 12 feeds a day.
And that's completely normal as well. We'd expect babies to demand feed at the beginning, so you don't need a specific regime. But I do think it's helpful to think roughly about a three-hourly regime. Mm-hmm. If you think about how long a baby stays awake, it's worthwhile thinking about it every 3 hours, because it does mean that your baby will be getting a good amount in. And that will help them have a really good sleep if they're having regular feeds.
We often talk about that, and parents say, "Well, you know, when will you know your baby needs a feed?" And I say, "Well, you'll be very lucky if your baby goes 3 hours in the first few weeks, and bring it on. That's a great length of time." I would say if your baby's gone 4 hours, always wake them up for a feed, because babies do need to feed often. And if they've gone for 4 hours, wake them up, preempt it. And when you're looking ahead, trying to think of that magical word routine down the line, you know, it's something that you want to get your feeds in during the day, which hopefully will mean that they'll be fat and happy and fuller during the day, so they'll sleep better at night.
Yeah.
But be baby-led the whole way. But you can help the process along.
And at the beginning, they may be feeding like hourly, two hourly. And then as they get older, they'll be stretching that out. If they are going for more than 4 hours, this is before they've kind of regained their birth weight, you'd worry about their sugars being dropping. So I think it's worthwhile, like you say, waking them up.
Definitely.
And I do want to talk about bottle feeding as well, because this is something that actually lots of parents do choose to bottle feed. That, you know, is the right thing for many mums and babies. I think sometimes the biggest challenge that parents may face is a disapproval from other parents. Don't waste your energy feeling guilty about this. This is your choice and your decision, and the decision you make for your baby is what's right for them.
Amanda, a lot of people mix it up, do a bit of both. For us, we have a breastfed baby, but before we go to bed, I mean, she's almost completely breastfed. Before we go to bed, we do give the baby a bottle of formula, because that just makes her sleep that little bit longer.
Do you know, whatever works for you. And we often say to our parents, you know, get those first 2 weeks established, get the breastfeeding established, if that's what you choose to do. Then by week three, bring a bottle. It could be a bottle of express milk, yeah, or formula, whatever you choose to do, into your life, so that when you are invited to that wedding or you do want to have a night out, someone else can feed your baby for you and dads can get more involved. So be they do the dream feed or they do the early morning, people going to work. It's a really lovely thing for dads to be able to do.
Expressing can be really helpful. And we discussed this in other podcasts, but right from the beginning, even before I was properly expressing, there's a thing called the hacker. Mm-hmm. And I found that if you were kind of leaking on one side, just putting it on, it would collect this milk that you could store in the fridge, which was just so helpful. And this is a really cheap pump which works just by suction, and you'd be amazed what you collect just while the baby's feeding on the other side, actually. And then you can use that in a bottle later in the evening, once you've stored that.
But Sarah, one of your tips for me, if you remember, do you remember you said to me,
I can't remember,
I don't get a single breast pump.
Which is true.
Just back to the bottle feeding thing. If you do choose a bottle feed, I think the most important thing is hygiene.
Yeah.
So sterilising, water boiled once and allowed to cool down.
Yeah, because the actual powder itself isn't sterile from when it's in the box. So you do need to sterilise that, and you need to sterilise the bottle.
Yeah, and just to follow the directions on the back of the box or the tin.
There are, in the past, people used to make up like 6 bottles and keep them in the fridge, but we don't recommend that anymore because there's a risk of infection. You need to make up each bottle one at a time, which I know can be tedious. Mm-hmm. You can get pre-prepared formulas that, particularly in those early days, may be a bit more user-friendly when you're completely exhausted, but it probably would be more economical using a tin if you were choosing to bottle feed for a longer period of time.
And sterilizer-wise, you can buy the electric sterilizer which just plug into the wall, or a microwave one, so you have a choice there.
Yeah, we don't recommend any particular brand. They're basically all the same, but they've just got different pretty pictures on the outside. It's basically made of cow's milk, so it's full of whey protein for the first 6 months. And then after that 6 months, it's more casein, which is meant to be better for the sort of hungrier babies. But things like the stay down formulas or the comfort formulas, there's not much evidence for them. I'd probably speak to your GP or midwife before considering any of those things. And we definitely don't recommend things like soya or goat's milk. Mm-hmm. That's not recommended for babies at all, actually, in the first year. If, for example, your baby was diagnosed with cow's milk protein allergy, your GP would prescribe a different type of milk. So please don't go just sort of diagnosing that yourself.
Very good point.
One thing I wanted to talk about is vitamins for the baby. If you're breastfeeding your baby, we recommend a multivitamin. So actually, for the first 6 months, that is vitamin D, which is usually about 8.5 to 10 microgram once a day. And actually, quite a lot of the health centres and children's centres now give these out free. So find out from your midwife and she'll be able to tell you the local area where they're offered. After 6 months, it changes to a different vitamin, which has got vitamin A, C and D. But if you are bottle feeding, you don't have to give this because it's already in the formula. So if you've got over 500 mils per day in your diet, then they don't need to have the supplements.
So Amanda, if there was kind of a few things that you might forget in that first week that you need to do, what might they be?
That's a good question. I was certainly sure that you've got your red book because that's your baby's Bible and you'll take that everywhere you go. Register for your GP if you haven't done so already, because when it comes to your 6 weeks check for you and your baby, it will happen at your GP's. And on that note, could I please urge women to also visit a women's health physio? They do the best postnatal MOT. And so if you've got any issues postnatally with your pelvic floor area, they're the best people to see, probably far better than a GP. I would definitely book your immunisations in. That comes onto you, that's your responsibility. Mm-hmm. Register the birth. You've got 42 days, 6 weeks to do that. And obviously get some vitamin D supplements.
Superb. Amanda, thanks so much
Thank
for coming on.
Thank you so much, Pleasure. Amanda. That's Thank been you really very helpful. Much.
Crib Notes, things parents Google at 3am.
Don't forget, what's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.